recorded in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Infamous Indie Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. This show features real-life stories of Indiana's most infamous horrors, Circle City serial killers, and crimes, both current and cold. I sit down and interview people who know these crimes the best. Sometimes they're authors, sometimes law enforcement, and even family members of the victims. In the end, you'll see a darker side of Hoosier hospitality. Hey everybody, thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Infamous Indie Podcast. I'm going to be starting this episode with a recording. You may have heard me talk about some of the other podcasters that I'm friends with here in Indianapolis, and this is the episode where we all get together, we sit in a circle, and we talk about why we're doing what we're doing. The three other podcasts that are part of this episode, you may remember one of them from the Richmond Hill episode, Hoosier Homicide. That's where I sat down with Danielle and Daniel to talk about their experience right next door, literally, to the Richmond Hill explosion. They were there that night. It's crazy that they have that connection. And then I also introduce you, and you'll be introduced here coming up shortly, to other podcasters, the two other podcasts, including Chris and Allie from the Three C's podcast, and Amy, Allie, Danny, and Alicia, and of course, Ronnie from Cold Case Chronicles. If you haven't been there or been to their website or to their podcast yet, please give them a listen. They're truly, truly beautiful people, and I'm very excited that we're all kind of met. It began on Instagram where I reached out to 3C's podcast, and Chris needed my help with something, and then I kind of pointed him in the right direction, and then we got in touch with Cold Case Chronicles and Ronnie and all of us and all the girls over there. You know, we've all just kind of been chatting on a Instagram Messenger, and we just thought, hey, why not? Let's meet. So we did, and one day we actually all got together, and we've kind of been doing that monthly ever since. So I'm super excited to be able to bring you this episode of my new friends, all four groups together. You know, we're trying to bring you guys insight about what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish with our podcast. We want to give you that insight and to what inspires us as well, and some of what have we experienced in our journey so far during this, for me, less than a year at this point of making podcasts. They kind of dive into, Ronnie does a great job asking questions of everybody in the room and keeping the topics moving. So I hope you really enjoy it. Thank you for all the listens. We're getting up to over 30,000 for sure. I think the last time I checked, it was like around 31,000 listens. So thank you for continuing to listen to my podcast and giving it a chance. And if you like it so much, please tell your friends about it. Especially here as Hoosiers, I think it's interesting that Indiana has such an incredible history. We have our obligation to share this history with everyone. So if you guys can pass the word along to other friends and family who might enjoy this podcast, I would love to get them involved as well. So without further ado, I will be now playing the episode that Ronnie edited for us. All of us, he's like a freaking whiz. It's crazy. He has like all the equipment. I'm going to post some pictures, and so you guys can check it out. So stay tuned, because there's more news coming with our group of podcast friends that you'll meet tonight. There's things in the mix. Things will be happening up on the front. We're going to see. I'm going to bring out some more info. I got some good news coming up soon. So without any further ado, thank you. And I hope everybody stays safe and enjoy the show.
In 5, 4, 3.
Hey, everybody. This is Danielle.
And this is Daniel.
And I'm Carla. And we are Hoosier Homicide,
a true crime podcast by Hoosiers for Hoosiers, or for anyone that doesn't know what a Hoosier is.
Whoa. I don't know what a Hoosier is. Do you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I do.
Great. We don't need to look anything up.
Go to Wikipedia and type in Alabama Hot Pocket.
No, don't do that.
And that'll tell you what a Hoosier is.
Just come listen to us. You'll find out.
Anyway, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @HoosierHomicide. You can also download any episode you prefer off of Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify.
We tell true crime stories with some random connection to our home state of Indiana. So come listen.
That's what she said.
For the love of God.
And for honest to goodness, stay out of the corn.
Pretty good.
The podcast movement has exploded in recent years, which begs the question, why? And what motivates podcasters to tell their stories? Today, we sit down with four groups of Indianapolis-based true crime podcasters, the 3C Podcast, otherwise known as Circle City Crime, Infamous Indy, telling tales of nefarious connections to our city, Hoosier Homicide, which is like a conversation with friends about Indiana-based murder. My name is Ronnie, and I've had the distinct pleasure of producing and editing the Cold Case Chronicles, for a group of women so passionate about bringing attention to long-forgotten cold cases. You'll hear their stories, their history, what drives these podcasters, and why they do what they do. You're listening to
Infamous Indy,
the 3C Podcast,
Hoosier Homicide,
Cold Case Chronicles.
I know your secret. I know the truth. I know your secrets and I'm telling on you.
Danielle, how long has Hoosier Homicide been around?
2 years in January.
So what got you into podcasting?
I listened to a lot of them and then decided I'd rather hear myself talk more. Well, now we're up to like 85 episodes, so they all start to bleed together. And I think we start repeating ourselves at some point, like, oh, listen to this funny story that we've only told 5 or 6 times. So if someone is binging of our episode, it'd be like, oh my God, get to it.
Who's all involved in your podcast?
Hoosier Homicide is me, myself, and I, and then my husband and my sister.
So 5 of you.
I have to do all the goddamn work. So yeah, there is 5 of me.
Yeah, I understand. I feel your pain.
Shh.
Ronnie, you don't do shit. Except censor people.
Oh yeah, you have to tell me if I'm... No. Can I curse?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't get censored. But she says things like, that guy's a fucking kid diddler. And I'm like, you can't say that.
And then she follows it up with allegedly.
And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way.
He's probably a kitty piddler. And then what he hears is, that guy touched 15 kids. That's not what I said.
So it's ever the other people here.
Right. She says very direct, inflammatory, mean statements
probably
about people that
maybe
you should not say.
You think.
Period.
Allegedly.
But yeah, I forced my husband and my sister to start the podcast because it's really important to me. It's like a second kid and it's a form of therapy and it makes me feel like I'm using my brain again since school got expensive, since student loans wouldn't go away and I couldn't spend any more money on school, but this gives me something to do. And it forces us to spend time together in a specific way, whether they want to or not.
That's all right. When you started, clearly you're Hoosier Homicide, you stick to Indiana stories.
Yeah.
Why the drive for that, not expanding out?
Because it's like, how many true crime podcasts are there? Like 80,000 or some shit. Yeah, it's insane. So it's like just to do the same one. It makes us different having 3 people, one of which is a guy. Instead of just 2 girls talking like a really basic podcast would be all the time.
Like Cold Case Chronicles?
No.
Hey, there are four of us. Asshole.
Only a man.
You guys left it open.
So we needed a niche. So
hi, Joe.
It's just any random connection to Indiana.
Stop giving me full body chills, Joe.
I'm sorry. Danielle's like, oh God, where do I go from here? Yeah.
I think Daniel isn't real into true crime all that much. And I can tell when I've overstepped talking about him, like, oh, you've had enough for the day. I should shut up. My sister will talk about it just about anything until I freak her out because she doesn't even live alone, but she freaks her out. And then I think I got into true crime because I was interested in the judicial system, like prisons and stuff, like lockup raw. Is that what it is? Lockup.
That one time when you were in prison?
That one time I went to prison. I was in prison for like 6 months, every Thursday, all day. You know, I could do time at the Indiana Women's Prison. I could do time there. And I tell Daniel that sometimes, like, just so you know, I could do it. Not a men's prison, but there I could.
I don't even know how to follow that up.
I taught classes there.
And we're done.
Yeah. Like coping skills, addiction classes, way underqualified, but they're inmates. They don't give a shit. They're like, go ahead, talk to them. Hopefully none of them stab you.
Nice. Mm-hmm. You've made it.
Yeah. That's a bizarre. Daniel hated it because I would be gone all day and no cell phone with inmates. And he's like, he hated it.
Did you have a keys or anything? Bring it in for him. Go hook him up with some.
I brought in too many pens one time and got in trouble. And I was like, dude, fucking throw them away. I'm sorry. Like a case of pens. And it's like, I guess you could get stabbed.
Three in your ass.
Yeah. I'm like, man, I'm so sorry about all my pens. So yeah. And then I make them sit down every Sunday and listen to me tell them a murder story.
That's great. You guys have a lot of fun doing it.
Oh, it's bad.
Oh yeah. The laughs are good. So Chris, tell me about the 3C podcast.
I'm like Danielle here, a longtime fan of true crime podcasts. And I used to bug my wife with it all the time, make her listen when we were going to bed and try to talk to her about it all the time. And
bedtime stories. Yeah. Chris.
Wasn't really her thing. But then I came across a story of a crime that happened very near our home after we moved to the Speedway area and got her talking about it. And we found out there was a Facebook group devoted to it. And so we really dove into that and got the newspapers.com subscription and really started getting into the history of the case. And we thought it was really cool at first that this Facebook group existed to kind of give a place for all the information to be. But the more we read actual articles, we realized a lot of the information going in there was bad information and it wasn't true. It was a lot of speculation. And so we thought, you know, how can we compile all of this in a way that people can look at it and it might actually help the case going forward? And so because we were so interested in the podcast, we just thought we'd give it a shot. So we started the podcast in late April of 2019. We're on about 22-23 episodes now.
All right, so talking about the Burger Chef murders, and all of your episodes have surrounded just around the one case, correct?
Yeah. So the plan is to eventually branch out into other Indiana cases, and we're going to do it a season at a time on just one single case. So but right now, yeah, we're devoted to the Burger Chef murders.
How long did you spend beforehand, before you released your first episode? How much time and research did you spend digging?
So we spent close to 6 months communicating with people on the Facebook group and figuring out who in there might have a relation to the case that we could talk to. So it was around the end of 2018 that we really got involved in researching the case. And then it was roughly January, February of 2019 that we decided we're going to figure out how to make this into a podcast.
What's the biggest revelation you've discovered in investigating that crime?
As far as what we've talked about so far on the podcast, I think the biggest thing for us is there's a misunderstanding out there that the police know who did this, but they just weren't able to find a way to arrest them or get them convicted. While there's a chance that's true, we've talked about 5 different investigators. They all say that, but they all tell you it's a different person. So really, this whole thing really needed to start at square one, which is what we're trying to do. I mean, we're hoping to generate information that the police can actually act on one day, but we just felt like it really just needed to start over, because that idea of they know who did it, they just couldn't prove it, really is doesn't ring true with this case. It's a very strange case. It actually started in Speedway, Indiana, about a mile and a half west of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was a late night, Friday night, November 17th, 1978. 4 fast food workers were closing up a Burger Chef restaurant, which was much like a Hardee's, Burger King, McDonald's type restaurant. And at some point after closing, around 11 p.m., they were taken away from the restaurant. Some money was stolen from the restaurant. But, and you know, when you talk about maybe a revelation, I don't know that we've been able to prove it yet, but it doesn't seem to us like it was really a robbery gone wrong, which has been the police's main focus for a long time. What happened after that is the 4 kids were actually driven 20 to 25 miles away down to Johnson County and killed in a field, and their bodies were discovered there about 36 hours later.
That's nuts.
Yeah. It's a pretty insane story. As you go through step by step, you know, each thing that you discuss happened next in the sequence of events doesn't make any logical sense, really, you know. Why this restaurant of all the places, you know, a lot of places already closed in the area might have been an easier mark. Why take the kids, even if they were fearful of being recognized? You know, why not just kill them there? As bad as that sounds, I mean, if you're talking about what makes sense as a criminal, why risk driving them 30 minutes away? So, yeah, it's just a whole lot of wacky stuff that it's hard to say. It's hard to believe this all happened in the same crime.
I think what gets me the most out of the Burger Chef murders is the fact that they were all killed in such a different manner. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's a lot of speculation that goes into that. Two of the victims were shot execution style, and each were shot three times from behind. And then one victim was found about 75 yards away from those two, and she had been stabbed twice in the chest. Another victim was found about 100 yards away in the opposite direction, and he had been beaten. And the actual cause of death for him was asphyxiation. So he had actually choked on his own blood, and they believe probably was still alive when the perpetrators left the scene of the crime. Our belief, and we've talked to several investigators who believe along these same lines too, is all four of the victims were probably meant to be shot and killed the same way. But we've got two very different personality types involved here. So the two kids that were shot were very straight-laced, compliant types, whereas the other two were, one was the manager of the store or the assistant manager of the store, and the other one was just a bold, flashy, athletic type. So they're the ones that they believe they took off running. And so when they were caught up with, they just had to kill them in whatever manner they could.
Do they think it was more than one person or just one?
So most investigators we speak to believe it was more than one person. They'll often speculate on whether that means two, three, or four. I don't think I've heard anybody mention the likelihood of there being more than four. The two primary theories that are out there include either two or three.
That's crazy. Because, yeah, how would they control them?
Control that many.
Yeah, because right. One of the other weird facts about the case is the assistant manager's car was driven away from the restaurant that night and left about a mile from the Speedway police station. So somebody had to be involved in controlling the kids. Somebody had to drive the vehicle that the kids were in. And then somebody else had to actually move the assistant manager's vehicle. There's a possibility she was forced to drive it away, but there would have had to have been someone in the car forcing her because the keys to the car were actually found in her pocket when they found her body.
It's amazing how fear can control you, though. Even right. Four people could be controlled by one person just by fear alone in that situation.
Good work.
So yeah, we're proud to be able to do this kind of work. I don't expect that we'll solve the case, you know, although we're going about it with the possibility that we might, I think that, you know, why not? But I think at least we're going to have the information compiled in a way that somebody maybe smarter or more connected than us can come along at some point and do something with it that hasn't been able to be done in the last 40 years.
It's very honorable.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by people who can do unsolved murders.
Yeah, I often feel that these ladies for the Cold Case Chronicles kind of start at a position of a disadvantage because you're telling a story that doesn't have an end. And we all know that listeners want a story. They want closure at the end and we can't deliver that. That doesn't mean that they're not good stories or they shouldn't be told. And I'm sure they have their own reasons, which they'll explain in a minute why they do that. But it does make it more difficult to tell a story that doesn't loop around to some solid ending. It's frustrating.
True that.
True that, yo. All right, Joe, tell us about Infamous Indie. It's a little different than a regular true crime podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. I take that as a full compliment. I really pride myself in making it different. I don't want to be constrained. You know, it started in February 2019, so I have a little, just under 20 episodes. I'm about to hit number 20. Actually interviewed an FBI agent today for the upcoming couple. It started with basically me and my wife, Carrie, who's sitting right next to me. We started listening to My Favorite Murder. Mm-hmm. And then we got into other podcasts, including Sword and Scale. And that was kind of like a big opening for me because I realized what I was hearing. And it's nothing against people who want to do podcasting for any reason. It's all good. But I have a special skill in the sense that I was a reporter. I was a journalist. So I looked at this as another avenue for me to do the work that I was doing on TV, but in an expanded format where on TV, you only hear a story. And if it's a shooting or a crime, you only get a minute and a half to tell a story. I know it's, I'm writing to third grade level, but that is not a lot of time. And there's a lot of things that are missed. And sometimes I would be on scene of a crime and I would be getting information and I had to package it. I had to basically not use it because I couldn't fit it in. So, and I found that so frustrating. And for so long, I started listening to podcasts. It kind of clicked. I was like, hey, I can use this as a medium to get more information out for what of stuff I'm hearing. And then what made it Indianapolis for me was because I lived in multiple places as a reporter. So I was doing it in other places and felt that way. And then when I came to Indy, and I met my wife and we started doing, you know, listening to the podcast, I realized that Wish TV had this archival footage of her Baumeister, the serial killer from Westfield who killed, you know, what police can call about 11, but they suspect way more than that. But I had this archival footage that I went down, I pulled the tape. I mean, literally dust on the boxes. I'm pulling the tape. I put it in and it's fucking Herb Baumeister staring at me. And it's tape that hasn't been played probably in 10, 15 years. And I'm like, holy shit, Herb's here.
He just entered the room.
Oh, man. And that was kind of a big moment for me because that got my obsession with Indiana crime going because I'm not from here. And when I realized who was here, I was floored. Reverend Jim Jones, Herb Baumeister, H.H. Holmes, D.C. Stevenson, the Sylvia Likens murder. I mean, you can go on and on. And that's just Indy. And these are Charles Manson, Dillinger. I mean, Jack the Ripper, if you want to believe Holmes is Jack the Ripper. But it's crazy to see all these connections here in Indianapolis. I mean, I went and saw Dillinger's grave with my son. Like, I'm like, that's obsession, I think, guys.
No, I thought it was really cool. It's some of those connections, you know, you don't realize exist until you start digging a bit. But like Charles Manson, you mentioned that just a second ago, the fact that he spent time here. Is he at the boys' school?
The boys' school. At least there.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a historian friend that believes that Charles Manson and Reverend Jim Jones may have been recruiting at Central State Hospital at the same time because weak minds follow leaders.
Yeah.
So a little bit. But Carrie, I want to ask Carrie a question.
Yeah.
She won't talk unless she gets asked the question. So I want to ask my wife a question. Carrie, how do you feel about me bringing our son to Dillinger's grave?
You know, he liked it. He liked going along with you. He talks about it. So as long as he's okay and comfortable.
Well, it was more of a historical thing for us.
Right. He also went on his first ghost tour last week, and he really enjoyed it. The only thing that creeped him out was standing over the body of the 10-year-old that H.H. Holmes had murdered in Irvington.
Yeah. Carrie joins me on the podcast every once in a while because I also feel that being a male, having certain interviews like domestic violence survivors, I need another set of ears to hear things that I might not be able to pick up as a male. And I invited Carrie to do a couple of episodes, one with our good friend who's a body language expert. I mean, that kind of gives you, Ronnie, the breadth of what the podcast is about. It's more like I try to do things that will be interesting, that have Indiana ties, that are true crime related. And not necessarily case by case. I'm kind of moving on. You know, I interview authors. And so I hope you guys like it because, you know, you guys are my clan.
No, I mean, it's certainly a very cool format. It's very unique. Just like you said, if that's your goal, you definitely hit the mark. It's awesome.
You talk about connections, Joe. One of the first episodes I heard of your podcast was about the Hollinsburg murders. To drop a little something we haven't really said on our podcast, one of the prime suspects in the Burger Chef murders was actually a roommate of...
Drollinger?
Yeah.
Roger?
A roommate of Roger Drollinger's.
Yeah. I thought it was Stonebreaker. Yeah. I've heard that as well. And partially, you know, this is why recently the reason we're in this room is because we're all on Instagram. And then I met Hoosier Homicide, Daniel, you know, and I got to spend a whole time in their living room with their dog.
Oh, my daughter still remembers you. You're going to go see Joe? I made a pie and I'm going to see Joe.
And then we started talking. I said, well, who else is good at podcasting and does true crime in Indiana? And sure enough, we're all here. And I think that's fate, honestly, that we're all kind of in the same mindset, that in the same time period to do stuff like this. I think it's really important. And I don't think we should forget how transformative it can be if it's used for good.
We're going to catch those bad guys.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Used for good and not evil.
She scares me.
She has to remind herself that like every day.
Yes.
I will use my powers for good today.
Mantra every morning. Yeah.
So speaking of mantras, Amy, can you tell me about that Cold Case Chronicles, how you came to be and how you tell me what to do all the time.
Yes, I do tell you. You're my little monkey. So Cold Case Chronicles came to be because I decided I needed something to do with my time other than telling you what to do. So we all four were fans also of My Favorite Murder, and we were all on the websites and those type things where we were true crime fans. And I started looking into different cases and feeling like I wanted to do something about some of these cold cases because there's so many in Indiana. I have a background in psychology and criminal justice, and I always liked forensics and that type thing. And so I just wanted to do something. I felt like there had to be something I could do. So I just kind of threw it out there to the girls and said, you know, does anybody else have an interest in doing this? And it wasn't even so much about a podcast at first. It was just about trying to get people together to try and help law enforcement with some of these cases. These girls were like all over it. Yeah, let's get this done. And so then Ronnie, my husband, was like, oh, let's do a podcast. So I was like, okay, let's do a podcast.
He brought this upon himself.
Yes. So he did this to himself.
It's not my fault.
It is.
Oh, the truth comes out.
It's not my fault.
So the first case, we contacted law enforcement. They were eager to have our help. And it's kind of gone from there. We just go case to case. And if law enforcement doesn't want our help, they get it anyway. And and we just are going strictly in Indiana just because there's so many cases in Indiana that need to be solved. And we just are going where the facts lead us. Sometimes it's in directions that the law enforcement has already gone, and other times it's not. There's been a couple of cases that are hopefully on the way to getting solved, and unfortunately, there's a couple that aren't very promising, but that's just the way cold cases are, unfortunately.
All right. So I'm gonna put one of you on the spot. Let Allie answer this. Allie, if you will, tell me all the people on your podcast, and then tell me what personality they bring to the table.
Okay. I definitely say Amy is the leader. She does the most external research out of all of us. And she's the one that reaches out to law enforcement and out to like random people associated with the case, like family members, friends, neighbors, what have you. And she's persistent. And she spent a lot of time on the phone with some of these people and has gotten some good information from there that we've talked about on our episodes. And she's good at following up with them. And Ronnie even hassles some of them too, like check your Facebook messages. We're trying to get a hold of you. And so, yeah, definitely from that perspective. Alicia, I would say you bring sarcasm.
She's like, why are you here? Like,
I forgot you were here.
No. Every time you, like most of the time when you're talking, I just burst out laughing because you say the most random funny stuff. And Danny, you're super supportive and you bring a lot of good ideas to the table as well. Ronnie, your technical skills, we wouldn't be here today.
No, we would not be
here.
None of us.
We'd all record on our phone in a circle. That's what my setup is.
And like you said, you brought it upon yourself.
Yeah, I kind of did. So the real story is that I had built the studio for music production for my daughter. She's a very good musician.
Does she sings
our intro.
No, she does. She sings our intro. So the song you hear at the beginning and the end of our podcast is my daughter.
Shout out Jada Rose.
Yeah. I built the studio for her and just for her, and I'd have something to do. And when she broke my heart, ran off to college, it really wasn't getting used that much. It is sort of like my man cave. I like hanging out in here in Newland on guitar and stuff. But it was a good opportunity with Amy and all her murder geeks to just say, hey, we're already here. I already have the gear. Let's go record some stuff and see what happens. And it's been tons of fun. It's just it's unreal how fun it is. Yeah, it gets frustrating after you edit the 13,000th but it's still fun. Yeah, just like that.
Everybody just at him.
I personally like the. I personally like the tangents we go off on while we're recording, and we're just like, Ronnie's gonna hate us so much.
They don't get published.
We we recognize them, and then we keep them going.
That's because they're vindictive bitches.
It's great though.
Because you've cut far too many of our like really important information or jokes. You've cut just too much of us.
Right.
You.
Allegedly.
I cut,
allegedly.
I cut too much of you. One of the funniest stories that I really want to try to get in here. Danny, please just tell us how you first got into true crime.
Oh, Danny.
Danny.
Why I like true crime?
Yeah. That.
Well, I really think it traces back to Scooby-Doo. I really do. when I think of, like, as a little kid, I watched Scooby-Doo all the time. And then I was always interested in, like, yeah, who's the bad guy? I wanted to figure it out. And then I think the fact that my dad was always paranoid and, like, wanting, as most parents, wanting me to be safe, just like the combo of that. And then, of course, all my parents watch, like, Criminal Minds and Law and Order and all of those shows. So I guess TV really impacted me to be interested in true crime. And then just like the paranoia of, like, there are really bad people out there, even if they're not, like, in my life, I know it's around, and I just wanted to be a part of it and, like, help reduce it because I'm more of a lucky person. So that's my story.
Scooby-Doo.
I grew up on TV and I'm TV.
Scooby-Doo was great.
I said, I grew up on TV and I'm TV.
I'm sorry, but I was terrified of Scooby-Doo. Like, really? That show was scary.
Of all
to
things
me.
You're scared of, it's Scooby-Doo.
Yes, Scooby-Doo and the Hulk. Were the two absolutely terrifying.
Scooby-Doo, they're the stupidest. It's always like, literally, they're running with the the suspect.
It's always just like, which mask is going to be the bad person?
Right.
Every time.
Mr. Druthers.
They always solve it in Scooby-Doo, though.
That's right. They always solve it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think one of the key points I'm trying to make is that all of you guys are driven by something totally different. You know, Amy has a fascination with true crime probably because she's just practicing to kill me in my sleep one night.
And then we're going to help her. Don't worry.
Already planned out.
We already know how it's going to happen.
I know. It's okay. Just everybody know if anything happens to me before my time's up, you know where to look.
No, they won't.
But Alicia, you're.
Yeah. I have all of the anxiety about everything. So I'm pretty sure I'm dying at every single moment, and I know exactly how I'm going to die in this room, but I've already figured out how I'm going to get out, and that's why I park under the window so I can just literally jump into my car and leave. So I kind of became obsessed with true crime and trying to avoid it and becoming a victim. So I'm still here, but somebody will find me one day.
So Danielle, you guys kind of, I don't know, vibe and just raw out on some things, you know. So just anything goes. You pretty much let it all fly.
I do have to cut some things that are like, oh, this is horrendous, we can't say this out loud.
The river shits was pretty high. Pretty high bar.
Carla. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty high bar. Goes to Ireland, gets the river shits. It was awesome.
There is a lot of shit, and I don't know why, but it's just a big part of our lives to talk about shit. It happens to my mother in Disney World. That's one episode. I feel real bad for her still about that, but she's a good sport. We just talked. Probably the first 10 to 15 minutes is just us talking about whatever has been going on in our lives. And some people hate that, like hate it, the banter. I'm like, but I'm fucking witty. So I give them a timestamp in our show notes. Like, here, you sorry, sad person, skip us being funny and jump to 12 minutes and 30 seconds in there. And
then you'll get to the story.
Yep.
Yeah, we've had some reviews like that, you know.
They told us we're like The View, but we took it as a compliment.
Didn't we read that out loud?
We're like The View, only not.
We're like The View, but with murder and less politics.
Yeah. And we're like, that's a great compliment.
Yeah.
But I think it was one
and
star.
And funnier.
Like, wait a second.
Well, of course, then there's always the one review that says that we're a crime knockoff. That was classic.
The what? You better bleep that name out.
That gave us all full body
we
chills.
We read our bad reviews on
I will.
Show.
Yeah.
I was going to say we should do that. We should have read a couple bad reviews.
I mean, we called that one out.
I know.
We could look at the bad reviews as constructive criticism and learn off it, I guess.
That was really good negative review that was actually credit. We were like, you know what? She's really right, actually.
We could do it now. This is why you should start listening to this podcast.
You know, what's funny is most of the negative feedback. Well, I think we have three bad reviews. Just three, really.
One's from me.
But we've gotten some hate mail.
Oh, I've never gotten
mail.
Mail?
Why don't you tell us? Things?
Email, you know what I mean.
You don't tell me anything.
You didn't share that with us?
I
we need
did.
To read that out loud.
Listen, you're going to go, oh, yeah, that one. The lady from LaPorte or something.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, that one. You guys are just sorry. You guys are just sad.
We had a guy the first like 4 weeks of our podcast. He would send me a Facebook message telling me I mispronounced something.
Oh.
So then I finally called him out on the podcast and he stopped.
So. I've seen people delete their reviews before because we made so much fun of them. The negative review.
Hi, can you come on to my show and actually tell me how to pronounce Speedway since I'm doing it wrong? It's Burger Chef, not Chief. You're just illiterate. Let go.
I've never gotten a mean review. Okay, mean reviews, yes, but never like a direct mean comment to me or like Facebook, Instagram. No one's ever said anything mean or sexually offensive to me in any way because they know that it's a woman that's operating all. Never got a dick pic ever. I'm still shocked.
You're asking for it now.
I keep requesting them.
Right.
And I say that out loud.
At Hoosier Homicide.
I'll tell Daniel that and he goes, you wouldn't tell me if you did get one. And I was like, no, I probably wouldn't. Well, he says he'll take it to work and show it to everyone. He was like, I'll show it at my work.
Hilarious.
So just be aware if you send yellow dick pic, it's going to be shown throughout central Indiana.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yes, because she's going to share it with all of us, too.
And we all investigate stuff, so we will trace it back to you.
Right.
Look at that mole. I think it's funny that particularly with you ladies in the Cold Case Chronicles, you all have different motives. I don't know. A voyeur of gross crime? I don't know. She's empowered by it somehow. I'm going to die.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. and then, you know, it's like...
Because I like to look at dead people?
Yeah, that. That's
oh,
the,
yeah,
that's
I'm
the
with
thing.
Her. Guys,
if you ever find a dead body, please call Amy.
Yeah, yes.
We get really mad when there's somebody else like finds a dead body and we're
and
like, motherfucker.
I know because
that's
it's
only
happening
7 miles
all the time.
Away. Right
by she just there. Thinks she we could probably solve it, you know? Well, yeah, because like the other day she said, I really smell something dead over by my house.
And I gave her like exact, I was like, I can't stop and get exact like latitude and longitude for you. But if you stop your car here and walk for this direction.
And I've been begging for a cadaver dog. And I really want one because
I said we can trade 4 cats for a cadaver dog.
I never found a dead body, but you know, obviously I covered a few things. So I've seen them. One of the worst was I was standing downhill on the east side from a shooting and we were shooting up and the family came in crying. They obviously were, you know, distraught and they were just covering the body and they put it in the coroner's van. And as they kind of, the fire department was there, they had to clean the street and they washed the blood off and it ran down underneath my shoes while I was doing my live shot.
Uh-oh. So
I didn't.
Did that make you?
No, that didn't make you too. But there was another time we, in our neighborhood, there was a shooting like next, our neighborhood next door. And I had the scanners for work and I was at work and I was like, oh my God, that's right next to our house. And so I raced home. Carrie was outside walking around. She
taking pictures.
Yes. Yeah. At me. Yes.
What did you see, Carrie?
Allegedly. I thought I saw the suspect that they were looking for. I was right outside of the tape and a guy with a hood up who fit the description of the suspect they were looking for walked quickly right by me as I was taking pictures of the crime scene
from across the street. Though you weren't so close or you were right next to it,
right next to him.
Oh, I didn't even realize. So as this is happening, she tells me it's going on.
I took the pictures, I sent them to you, and I asked you what was going on.
Right. And then I came racing home after I told her, get in the house, lock the door, and don't come out. Of course, everyone was really scared when I got home. But then Channel 8 was there, so I went over and started working. And because I was a daybreak reporter, and this was a night shooting, so I kind of helped the night side crew do some extra work. We went live on Facebook. As I was coming home, racing, I see the guy in a hoodie walking across the bridge over the highway on County Line Road near 65, walking over 65 on County Line. And I thought to myself, what the hell is a guy? And it was like 20 degrees outside, only wearing a hoodie, walking with his face down. And this just happened. So I immediately pulled over to the next police officer I saw and told him, I figured you would like that story.
Did they get him? Was it him?
Yeah, it was him.
Dang.
And they arrested him.
There Sweet. You go.
So no dead body, but
I see Rojo right there.
That would be awesome. The
Joe Rojo.
Better.
Joe on the go. Nice. We've cool. got a story like that. It'll probably be my wife's lasting impression of our podcast. The very first night we sat down to record, we hear a pop. And it sounds really weird because we had the headphones on and everything. And I'm like, is that what I think it was? So we both get up. And by the time we open the door, the lady across the street is running out of her house screaming, oh my God, oh my God. Apparently, the guy inside the house had allegedly. Shot himself, allegedly. The guy had shot himself. But yeah, like the very second we sat down to record our first episode. And so I actually was the one first one to call 911. And like
second, that might be the greatest beginning of a podcast, yes. true crime podcast I've ever heard of.
It was some kind
or
of sign.
The saddest.
I don't know if it was do it or don't do it, but it was some kind of sign.
Frickle frackling.
Who's frickle frackling on the iPad?
Since podcasting runs in the family and pets are an extension of the family, if you've ever listened to Hoosier Homicide, you'd know about their dog, Boris. And just like our family, Amy's a crazy cat lady. Like mother, like daughter, Jada just so happens to FaceTime in while we were in a recording session. Hi, Jada.
So this is the famous Hi. Singer on the on your podcast?
Yes.
Jada, will you sing our song right now?
Like right now?
Yes.
Yeah, sure, do it.
That's weird.
I know, but I thought maybe you'd do it anyway.
Are you in your car?
Yeah, I am in my car. I called mom and then a bunch of friends, and I just need someone to convince me to get out of my car because it's cold and I don't feel like it. So
we'll go inside and take the phone with you. We want to see Otterbox.
Yeah, we'll walk
go,
with
we
you.
Want to see Otter. Go.
Yeah, we'll walk with you.
You want to see Otter?
Yeah.
Oh, look, that was all she needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, no, he's in the car with me.
Immediately, the sound guy, Ronnie, just hooks up Otter's the sound. The
yeah.
Can we get Jada one of those cat backpacks for Christmas? Like,
I have
the other day recommended that I bring the cat stroller to campus.
Yeah.
Your friends are stupid.
No, do it.
I am jaywalking.
Who's behind you?
Don't talk to her.
Don't worry, we'll solve it, Jada.
Not funny.
She didn't even, she's like, that's not even a thing.
She's like, don't she even joke.
Just don't get murdered.
Yeah. Sorry for interrupting.
What is the other saying?
It's okay, I guess.
Stay sexy.
From the podcast that shall not be named.
Be weird. Mm-hmm.
Full body chills.
Full body chills.
Full body chills. Full
stay
body
alive chills. Or...
Yeah, be weird, be rude, stay alive.
What's
oh, the exact same thing as
what's
my favorite
Jensen and Holes? Don't be a
what's your guys?
Have the day you deserve.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that,
oh.
I love Danielle's is good.
For honest to goodness, because that's our state slogan is for honest to goodness, which is really weird. And then stay out of the corner.
I did not know that was our state slogan.
Yeah. She's so
I'm
happy.
Not nearly as clever as these ladies are.
No, neither am I, dude.
Look at her, she's so happy.
She's so happy. She's like, I bow to you.
Fox,
oh my
Simba.
God, that is a cute cat. A lot of cats today.
I know. See, you like them.
Go give her food person, and give worry. Her a cookie.
Give her a cookie.
Give her some catnip.
See
and some
how
cookies.
Sweet what? Her apartment is. It's ridiculous.
I know. She's like fancy and rich.
Yeah.
That's wow. a nice apartment.
I know. I
like yeah, no wall. Shit.
I know. You. Brick wall.
Show
I didn't
your,
even get
show
one
your
of those
guitar wall.
After college.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll so call, you really she really has to sing. Can you tell
yeah,
convince
sing.
Her to sing, Ronnie?
Yeah, sing something for us.
Do the intro.
She doesn't remember
Which part?
It. Any of it.
I don't know.
I know your secret. I know the truth. I know your secrets and I'm telling on you.
Ooh, that was good, Jada.
Way to go.
Woo!
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you very much.
One of the cases that we're about to do is an inner city girl. And I talked to her mom last week and I didn't realize it, but it happened to be the week of this girl's birthday. And even though she was older, and I mean older, like 22, but her mom was so upset and she was just like, you know, I'm just so thankful for you because you just are showing interest. I felt like sad, but then happy that I chose the case too, but then also so sad for her that no one else has shown interest in her child.
How many cases are out there like that?
Right. Tons.
And I'm just dovetailing here. It's exactly what it is with me and when I felt the news wasn't doing its job. I mean, there's only so many people and so many hours to be able to cover everything that happens. And a lot of these cases, like you're saying, they once the news cycle, that 24-hour news cycle is over, it's kind of gone. Delphi is an outlier. You know, it's something that's a different case where it kind of comes up every 2 years because it's unsolved. But, you know, they're a lucky family that they get that coverage because it is such an interesting crime.
And they're also kind of an anomaly as well because they have a family member who doesn't stop talking about it.
If Kelsey didn't keep pushing for that, I bet it would fall to the wayside as well.
That case was a big part of my motivation for starting our podcast was because I was seeing a lot of the news reports from, you know, 2015 about the Delphi case that were so similar to the same things I was reading from 1978, 1979, 1980 about the Burger Chef murders. And it's like these things just become about publicity more than police work. And, you know, so I wanted to talk about that. And hopefully you don't see a case like the Delphi case, or there were two others that happened very close to our home. I don't know if you know the story of Amaya Robertson, the little baby.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that happened right around the time we were contemplating the podcast. And so those two things were really at the top of our mind of we need to start talking about how this is actually going down in our state.
Well, and we talk about a lot how like the news can be a blessing and a curse all at once, because we go through these old articles and sometimes we get most of our information from news articles. But then we're like, well, depending on who did the article and if they word it this way versus this way, we're like, oh, it looks like this guy is guilty. Like that one, the whole book on that Crowell did was like based off this stuff and everyone believed it. And that's what everyone thought. But then we're like, well, it's not true. And then so like in that way, it's a curse. And then we're like, but the news articles give us way more information than police have ever given us. And
but
so then
one
it's a
simple
blessing.
Word
yeah.
that a, like, okay, a newspaper so, could yeah. use changes everything. Yeah. And then you use that word and you're like, well, but the news said this, but that reporter might have just written it wrong. Yeah. And the way it was worded changes everything.
Because as Joe says, like sometimes they don't have a lot of time to do stuff like that. Right. So they don't double check or they don't realize what they're saying and how impactful it can be.
Yes.
Or reporter A is having to pack up and leave, but reporter B comes in and gets completely different.
It wouldn't be different. It would just be passed along. So they would telephone effect.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then you're put this
right.
In
right. That's 80s. What I mean. They would get something completely different out of it.
Because if you're researching something like when we do it and I'm literally trying to figure out if somebody lived close to someone and a reporter wrote 1/4 mile, but it was actually 4 miles. Or, you know, and it makes a huge difference when you're trying to figure out if they live close enough to walk somewhere.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it might have been just a mix up in the paper, but you can't go back and ask someone when it was 30 years ago.
Yeah. And what I think people are learning, and I think you can attribute this to so many true crime podcasts, is that police don't put as much time or have as much time as people think they do to work on these cases. So when you get people who are very passionate about it and who have the time to go look into it, it makes a big difference. And that's what I think a lot of people are doing in true crime.
Well, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people believe that they're still working really actively on their case.
Right.
And they're not, because a lot of these officers and even DAs aren't working hard on their cases, and the victims really believe that they're actively working on their case and they're really
or
not.
They retired.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of shifting and moving of personnel.
Yeah. I can tell you for a fact on the Burger Chef case, there are retired officers that are working harder on this case than the current officers.
Absolutely.
And
that's happened in a lot of the cases.
And I'll come across information and I'm like, man, I want to go tell them. I want to go, but I just know it would end up on somebody's desk or floor, or, you know, it's such a frustrating thing. I feel like I've got to run with it myself and I'm not qualified to do it.
You know? We've done the same thing. And I've sat there and I'm like, you know, until I have this on a silver platter to hand to them with all the work done, there's no need to do it, because otherwise it's just going to sit there.
Yeah.
I think we got really lucky with our first detective too.
Oh, he was fabulous.
He was great.
Completely understands that maybe some of the information we're not giving him, we don't know everything that he does, but some of it gives him just a whole new light on it. But he's also kind of he teaches. He's an instructor. He
wanted it to be solved. So.
Yes.
He understands the value of using other people too.
I mean, right.
To be able to keep it going.
And I think that's only going to keep going. I think people are going to slowly start to realize how important it is to use podcasts that are dedicated and passionate about solving crimes to solve these murders.
And we're not trying to be police officers. We're very self-aware that this is all like we're regurgitating a lot of, at least from my perspective, I'm regurgitating a lot. We're trying to find new avenues, new ways of thinking years later. I mean, the whole world's changed. We have a computer in our pocket all the time. So our thinking has changed. So why not look at old stuff in a new way? We've talked about it. And Ronnie, you even said it today. Like, we don't care if we make money.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's a big point for all of us. And I think we've, you know, in the last two times we've met, and both times that we've met, all of us, I think that's come up a lot because that's really important. I mean, it would be awesome if we could, but that's not why we're on this and why we're doing this. We want to change the world in some small way, in our own way.
I'm going to just stop you right there. If somebody wants to give us money, I'm not going to stop. So you go live your life.
I was clear. I didn't say I wouldn't take money. Just that that's not our goal.
I'll take Joe's part.
Wait, hold on. Time out. Where's the union rep?
Today, our network of friends and podcast family expanded greatly. We'd love some feedback on what you've heard today about true crime podcasting. Feel free to reach out to any of us, Cold Case Chronicles, Infamous Indie, 3C Podcast, or Hoosier Homicide. And as always,
have the day you deserve,
especially if you don't like solving crimes.
As I always say, stay safe.
And for honest to goodness,
stay out of the corn.
I know your secrets and I'm telling on you.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate
it.
Thank
you. Awesome.
I hope you enjoyed that episode, an obviously special episode. I'll always remember this group get together that we did. I mean, wow. Four different podcasts in one room. We all talk about the same thing, but man, are we different. And you can just see in that episode that we are all like-minded in the most important ways. So thank you for listening to that episode. The next episode will come out in another couple weeks. Stay tuned for that. Also, big announcements coming up when it comes to our little group of friends. We love keeping everybody up to date, and we'll let you know as soon as it happens. But things could be a brewing, so stay tuned for that. Next week, or next episode, is going to be that Jason Cottingham, his mother Jill Coy, was murdered. And 26 years later, he speaks out for the first time ever. So I hope you enjoy that episode. And stay tuned. As always, everybody, you know, the holidays coming up, even more so, you know, just hug your friends and family. Know that they're so special. And this time that we have with them can be taken away very quickly. So just always remember to stay safe. And I love you. And I hope you have a great, great holiday coming up. If you don't hear from me over the holiday, but anyway, just stay tuned, everyone. Things are happening, and I'm so thankful that you guys are in my life. I really, really appreciate it. So love to keep that, spread that love. All right, everyone, thanks again, and remember, stay safe.
And I went to her and was trying to revive her. I saw it, but I didn't. I mean, I saw it and I can remember the blood. I do remember her on the gurney as they were taking her arm just dangling off in a dead way. And I saw it, but it didn't register. Years later, remembering that, you know, that was one of those clues. Had I been a little older, I would have known that things were much bleaker than what they were.
It's been 26 years since his mother was murdered. And for the first time, he's talking to me about that day. Jason Cottingham was only 14 years old when his mother Jill Coy was killed by her ex-boyfriend turned stalker. Together, Jason and I remember Jill, who she was as a person, the impact of her case on Indiana. And that's next time on Infamous Indy.